Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything, from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Welcome to Breaking Banks. I'm JP Nichols. This is our 300th episode, so we'll have a special show coming up next week, where we'll take a look back over all those episodes over the past 6 years with some of our favorite guests and shows. I want to take just a moment to congratulate Brett King as the creator of Breaking Banks, along with my regular co-host Jason Henricks and the entire Provoke.fm media team on this significant milestone. I'd also like to thank our sponsors who helped make this show possible, and I'd also like to take a moment to thank you, the listeners. Thanks for listening. Thanks for your great feedback and ideas, and thanks for sharing the show with your friends. You have helped make this the number one global fintech radio show and podcast with over 6.5 million unique listeners in 180 countries. Well, let's get started this week with some conference announcements. The Mobile Payments Conference is in Chicago, August 26th through 28th, with a great lineup of commerce and payments experts ranging from Google and Pinterest to Venmo and PayFi, and you can use the code MPC 19BB50. That's MPC 19BB50 to get a special discount there on the Mobile Payments Conference. If you're looking for ways to create new sources of value for your bank or credit union, or if you've been tasked with building or managing an innovation team within your organization, then you really need to attend the BAI Innovation Summit coming up October 8th through 10th in Boston. You know, innovation isn't just chasing shiny new technologies. It's about creating value. And Jason Henricks and I will be conducting an interactive, hands-on session that'll take you through an empirical approach to value creation. It's designed to maximize results and minimize wasted effort. We'll start with a series of strategic frameworks and lenses to help you pursue innovative ideas that are highly aligned with your strategic priorities. The result is a portfolio approach that balances the need to incrementally improve while creating viable new options for the future. You can find more information and register at BAI.org. And now you can save $300 if you use the code S19, S like Sierra, 19, at BAI.org. And finally, Solstice Forward 19, FWD. Solstice Forward 19 is October 16th, 2019 in Chicago. Forward is a full-day interactive summit with revealing explorations of bold, innovative ideas and immersive, emerging tech experiences designed for forward-thinking executives. The world has long been filled with breakthroughs, many of which we take for granted today. You can explore the people, processes, and problems that arise in the pursuit of greatness, the latest thinking and digital disruption from those creating today's biggest breakthroughs. Experience the hands-on, immersive technologies, networking, and knowledge building. You can go to solstice.com/FWD19 and use the code FINTECHS, F-I-N-T-E-X, for 50% off. That's solstice.com/FWD19 and use the code FINTECHS for 50% off. Well, I am happy to welcome back to the show Penny Crosman, editor-at-large for American Banker. Penny's a regular contributor to the show, but it's been way too long since we've had her on. Penny, you recently wrote an article in American Banker called Fintechs Trying to Solve America's Retirement Problem. And there certainly is a retirement problem. We've been talking about it quite a bit on the show lately. And you open the article with, as you say, no shortage of alarming statistics about retirement in America. As you cite, nearly half of U.S. households age 55 and over have no retirement savings. And more than one in five Americans have less than $5,000 saved for retirement. 15% have no retirement savings at all. And you go on to note that there are plenty of companies that are happy to help consumers who already have a sizable nest egg, but relatively few are focused on those who've fallen short on saving for retirement. And so you go on to profile a couple companies we'll talk about here today, FinHabit and Kinder. But I'm curious, what made you decide to write this article?
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on, JP. I appreciate it. It's something I've been thinking about a lot, you know, partly because of all these alarming statistics that keep coming out, partly because I know people. There's actually a woman I know quite well who has no savings, and she was getting support from a group that just cut her off. And, you know, she's basically, I'm paying her rent every month. And there's no like simple solution. She's an older woman, her son is across the country and seems to be sort of not involved, and she doesn't have anybody, and she's in quite a pickle. And I think some of us are headed in that direction. And of course, there's also the growing gig economy, where there are more and more people who are working as freelancers. They're Uber drivers. They have very small businesses. People who just aren't getting a regular income, and more importantly, don't have a 401k that is provided by their employer. I mean, I feel like there was a time when pretty much everybody had a 401k, and then, you know, everybody who worked had a 401k, and then we all got Social Security. And today the dynamic is changing, and a lot of people don't have that 401k to rely on. And P.S., for those of us who do have a 401k, it's not necessarily a complete answer either, because we're living longer and we're not saving as much as we should be. So the 401k is not necessarily quite the safety net that I think it once was. So, and I'm getting older myself.
aren't we all? Well, but you bring up a couple of good points. I mean, first of all, it's one thing to cite a bunch of cold statistics, from a research report. It's another thing when you have real life human beings attached to these sort of things. And I think increasingly, like you, a lot of us are, if we're not finding ourselves in that situation, we know somebody who is. And you're right. And I'll even add to what you said. There was a step before that. Before all of us had 401ks, all of us had, at one point, actually defined benefit pension plans. And those are almost all completely gone now. And so we're responsible for our own savings. And as you talk about the move to the gig economy and other kind of structural changes to the economy, it does really make a big difference. And one of the companies that you profiled in your article, FinHabits, is kind of focused on the gig economy too. Talk a little bit about FinHabits and what caught your eye to what they were doing.
Well, I met the CEO and founder, Carlos Garcia, and I found what he was trying to do very interesting. He comes at it from the point of view of being a Latino, and I didn't realize that Latinos are much more affected by this problem than the general population. About two-thirds do not have access to a retirement plan at work. So he got thinking about how to help his fellow man and came up with this this company and this plan where people just save very consistently toward a Roth IRA. And so it's kind of like, it's trying to introduce the idea of an IRA to people who probably don't know what it is, and trying to get them to build their financial habits, which I think is where the name comes from, and just contribute even a small amount, even like $50 a month to this plan, and just very gradually start to build something. And one thing I thought was unusual is that, you know, when you manage money, you really profit well by having large volumes of money to manage. And here, you know, the average balance so far is $500 per account. And I thought that was kind of interesting, because I think that's something that a typical bank would find less appealing. Now, banks do offer, of course, savings accounts that could potentially be applied toward retirement. But I think what they're doing here is getting people used to the idea that they have to think about and save for retirement, and also putting the money in that IRA where it's not easy to spend, and thereby, you know, really, really helping people to go from nothing to starting to have a plan.
This episode is sponsored by another great podcast called The Meb Faber Show. The Wall Street Journal named it one of the top 5 investing podcasts you should not miss. If you're looking to learn from the brightest minds in finance, or simply want to know more about investing in a casual and fun interview format, it's a must listen. The show is hosted by Meb Faber, CEO of Cambria Investments and an award-winning ETF manager. The goal of his show is to help you grow and preserve your wealth by giving you new investing insights and ideas. So check out the Meb Faber Show wherever you enjoy your podcast. That's Meb, M-E-B, Faber, F-A-B-E-R. You don't want to miss it.
Yeah, I think there is validity to saying it's one thing to say you've got a savings account. It's another thing to have it in an IRA that makes it much harder to get at, and the earnings are growing on a tax deferred basis. And the other added benefits of a Roth IRA. And you mentioned that FinHabits was thinking about people like Uber drivers and Etsy entrepreneurs. And you note that Uber cut a deal with Betterment a few years ago, but FinHabits felt like there was still another layer there. What was missing for the gig economy workers today?
Yeah, I think I think a Roth IRA is a Roth IRA. It's not that it's different.
Yeah, that's just the container.
Yeah. Right. So I think that for the most part, what FinHabits is doing is reaching a different set of people. And it's also, it's marketing to them with videos in Spanish. And I think it's, you know, it's not necessarily offering something different from Betterment, but mm-hmm. I think it does have that mindset of trying to help explain to people, you know, what it is and how it works, and also trying to really encourage people to contribute. Because even if something's available through Uber, I don't know that, I don't actually know the rate of drivers that actually use that particular service. I don't know how much outreach Betterment does, but I think FinHabits, they try to make education a component.
So it's as much a segmentation play as anything from their perspective.
That's my understanding, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you also talk about a company called Kindur, K-I-N-D-U-R. It's an amalgam of kin for family and dur for the duration problem that Americans have. So talk a little bit about Kindur and how they caught your eye.
Yeah, well, again, I met Rianne Horgan, who's the CEO, at our Invest conference a couple weeks ago in New York City. And just hearing her story, I thought, was really interesting. She worked at J.P. Morgan Chase for almost 2 decades, and she was trying to help her parents save her retirement when she realized just how difficult and complicated it can be, you know. And she was trying to understand Social Security on behalf of her father, who is, I think he's now 67, so she was trying to figure out, like, how he should be making decisions about that. She was reading a 300-page book about it, and she felt like this is just not what an average American can do. It's not practical. So she developed a whole kind of plan around managing or figuring out how much money you're really going to need at retirement, and kind of figuring out a way to pay yourself an income through all those years. Because her philosophy is we all base our spending and our budgets and our financial lives on having a weekly income, because we've done that for so many years. So she tries to create that through a combination of math, through actuarial math and figuring out predictions of how long a person's going to live and what kind of healthcare costs they're going to have and what kind of life costs they're going to have, and figure out how much they're likely to need to live comfortably in their post-retirement years. And then through her plan, if you go with her recommendations, you actually receive a paycheck every 2 weeks, just as you do in your working life. And so I thought that was kind of an interesting concept. So a lot of it is trying to make sense of your current financial environment, which her advisors try to help you do, and figure out your different bank accounts you might have, savings you might have, your potential Social Security, any 401k you might have from a job that you've had, and then putting that together and really coming up with a very practical plan for how to really live, you know, not just survive, but actually live during your retirement years and do the things you want to be able to do.
Well, that's squarely in the sights of, I think, most financial planners and most financial companies to talk about. You know, we'll help you figure out what your retirement income looks like, and we'll take all of these complex calculations like minimum required distributions, and, you know, should I take Social Security now, or am I better off waiting on that for a few years? And it sounds like they're really trying to take that and bundle that into something that's a lot more user-friendly. And part of that is potentially annuities. Nothing new about annuities, which can, you know, take a pool of money and turn that into regular income. But I do think there's something there around how do we simplify that? You cite in the article, and again, another example of you know, this not being broad statistics, but some real human beings. And her parents had multiple retirement accounts. So you've got to carry out these calculations across multiple assets. So part of this is really about kind of simplifying it and make it more user-friendly. Is that the approach for Kinder?
Yes, I think that's exactly right. And having it be mainly through an app, so it's less of a human that you're meeting with, and more of after the initial plan is created, it's more of an automated thing and an app that you're using. And also the fee is 0.5% of assets under management, where I think normally the fee is about 1% of assets under management for the typical investment advisor. So it is a little cheaper. And I think it's also the visibility, because I think sometimes when you use a human advisor, you're kind of trusting that person. You don't always have a nice app or even website to use to see exactly what's happening, and to be able to share, you know, with your, in this app, you share the account with your spouse. You can both see exactly where you're at and what's coming and what remains and so forth. So I think there's that convenience and visibility that they're providing that I don't think always exists.
Well, it's another iteration of this kind of age-old battle now between the so-called robo-advisors and the human advisors, exactly as you said, where the human advisors, oh, just trust me, you come see me and my firm, and we have all this stuff, don't worry, we'll take care of you. And an increasing number of people that say, but, you know, we can do this math, we can provide the technology, and we can make it easy. And you talked about this a little bit earlier, and you talk about in your article. It is difficult because some of these are low dollar accounts. And in fact, you talked to our another regular and contributor to the show, Theo Lau from Unconventional Ventures. And you know, she talks about this youth-oriented culture. We are, you know, millennial Gen Y to death here. Well, meanwhile, we've got older generations that are really dealing with a lot of this stuff, some with substantial assets and some with not nearly enough. And there really are no shortage of opportunities to go after. And yet we're still maybe not seeing quite enough. I mean, what do you think banks need to do to help fill this gap?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, personally, I feel like they might want to consider partnering with companies like Kinder and FinHabits. I do think, as you pointed out, you know, Betterment and Wealthfront do have automated IRA options, so that's also something that they might want to think about, partnering with a robo-advisor like that. And obviously, you know, educational help and advice for people to help them realize that this is something they're going to have to deal with. I think a lot of people put off the thought of retirement for a long time, but there's obviously a need to think about this earlier on in the game and have an awareness that, you know, you are going to have to stop working at some point, and there is going to be a need for you to have quite a bit of you know, money to draw down from. And you know, another thing that Rian told me that I didn't mention before was that people are surprised at when they do these actuarial calculations at how much healthcare is going to cost them. I think it was something like $280,000 for the average person. You know, so right. Some people it's going to be more than that. And I think it's something that people don't want to think about, but it's something that they really have to think about. And so I think banks could play a role in trying to get people just to be more aware and to start making more of an effort along these lines.
Well, I agree. And I think there's the added complexity that for a lot of these people who maybe need this help the most, they may not be the folks that are visiting banks on a regular basis. And so, the age-old challenge there. But I think we'll leave it there for now. Penny, as always, thanks for joining us on Breaking Banks.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
We need to take a short break right now, but when we return, we're going to continue the theme as Jason Henrich sits down with Kinder founder Rianne Horgan. We'll be back with more Breaking Banks right after this.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
The Voice America Live Events Channel is here now to showcase your corporate, individual, or organization's live event. Visit voiceamerica.com/live events to see all of our past live events and find out more. Whether it's a multi-day conference, special speaker, or single-day event, we've got everything to make your event a success. We can do a few hours or a few days. For more information about taking your event to the next level, call Jeff Spinard at 480-294-6417 or email info@voiceamerica.com. Again, that's Jeff Spinard at 480-294-6417 or send us an email to info@voiceamerica.com. Voice America is where you are and where you want to be. Join us around the globe as we broadcast live from some of the most interesting events available. Don't forget to view all our live events, including on-demand access to past events that you may have missed by visiting voiceamerica.com/live events.
We're always talking business. Talk to an expert. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag #BreakingBanks. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to the second half. We're still talking about aging and more specifically retirement. One of the companies that Penny brought up in the first half was Kinder. I'd like to think of it as equal parts retirement planning and robo-advisor. We have Rianne Horgan, founder and CEO, joining us to talk about aging in fintech. Rianne, is someone in her early 40s, and I realize I'm not, that rolls off my tongue, I probably am not supposed to be saying your age, especially on air, and I will hear about that when I get home tonight. But what made you start thinking about this demographic?
Thanks, Jason. Yeah, it is scary when all of a sudden I'm considered old, being in my 40s. But I've been having a conversation with my dad for the last decade about retirement. So he's a classic baby boomer. I'm 69 years old, and for most of the decade, the conversation between him and I was around when he could retire. So he, like many boomers, delayed retirement because of 2008. But a couple of years ago, the conversation shifted from when to how, and it was the how that really blew my mind. I found myself reading a 300-page book on Social Security and figured there had to be a way. It really amazed me that we expected consumers to digest 300 pages and become experts just to be able to access their most fundamental retirement savings. And that was the beginning of the journey, which is Kinder, which is, how do we help this new retiree automate retirement income in a world post-pensions?
Now, I like how you set that up with both when and how, is two slightly different things, because there's always this operating assumption. You work till you're 65, you retire. I even think is, well, I'm older than you, so you know, I'm a little closer to it. But when I see things come from our financial advisors, you know, and it says, you know, and when you retire at 65, it's like this embedded operating assumption that that's when it happens. But I guess it really doesn't, especially post 2008 for the boomers, you know, we're there. You know, what are you finding with your clients? Are they still fixated on that as a goalpost?
So the word I always use is people are gliding into retirement. So that magic age of 65, I think, is a bygone era. What I hear more and more is our users moving from full-time to part-time, you know, transitioning into retirement, but also trying to think about, you know, what their purpose in retirement is. So one of the things I think is super interesting is this, you know, thinking about the gig economy and kind of the increased ability to get part-time work. You're seeing, for example, women in their 50s and 60s being the most successful hosts on Airbnb. So I think what you're seeing both for purpose reasons, but also from like the financial reality is that many boomers are saying like that old age 65, black and white, I go play golf, doesn't quite work anymore. And what you're seeing is like transitioning into retirement, maybe taking some part-time income, and then thinking about in a world where retirement spends, you know, last 25, 30 years, like how do you get the most out of it? How do you want to spend your time?
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I know from some of the research we did at Perk Street that hands down across the globe, but especially in the US, the number one fear is running out of money. And the number two fear is closely related, which is actually being unable to pay for medical expenses. And I'm assuming when you bring out that, you know, 25 to 35 years, how much greater magnitude is that than kind of the traditional models that people used to plan for?
So I think a lot about this shift from pensions to 401ks. And I think, you know, all of us have come to understand that that shift pushed saving risk to the individual. So, you know, Jason, you and I, we've got to save for our own retirement. But I think the piece that was really missing in the public discourse was how it also pushed longevity risk to the individual. So not only do we have to save enough for retirement, but then you get to this magic retirement and you've got to figure out how much you can spend. And frankly, the only way to figure out how much you can spend is to be able to predict how long you think you're going to live, which is, you know, a lot of like mathematical, you know, precision for something you don't actually know the answer to.
Well, not just how long you're going to live, how you're going to live. You know, how do you predict medical expenses built into that?
Well, and I think that's one of the things that I find surprises consumers the most is that radically kind of growing cost of healthcare and retirement. So the average baby boomer couple will spend about $280,000 in retirement on healthcare. And that assumes they're one of the lucky few that doesn't spend time in a nursing home. If you spend time in a nursing home in retirement, you're talking about an additional $100,000 a year. What's amazed me is that consumers are surprised by this. And I think part of that has been because for years, you know, the financial services community has always felt like, well, healthcare is a health issue, not a financial issue. But I think when healthcare costs you $280,000 in retirement and then maybe an extra $100,000 a year, like it absolutely is a financial issue. It's probably your largest financial expense in retirement.
So you deal with the when, now you're getting into the how. How is Kinder approaching that problem? What are you bringing to it?
So our goal at Kinder is to really be that holistic advisor for the customer. Today's boomer has to go to 7, 8, 9 different places to actually crack the retirement code. They're going to a financial advisor, a planner, an insurance agent, a real estate broker. They're spending time on Medicare.gov. They're probably looking at the 8 different calculators on Social Security's website. And the challenge with a consumer is that even if they're able to get 7 or 8 pieces of good advice, they're left at the end of the day to DIY that cocktail. And I think you know when you go to your GP, you know, part of the role of the GP is to really understand how all the pieces of medicine and diagnoses come together. So at Kinder, we're really, you know, set up to sit in the middle, answer these this kind of holistic decision making. And ultimately, our paycheck is intended to be the ultimate simplification of managing retirement income. And that, again, I go back to this, like, you know, the need for a holistic answer when the ecosystem of financial services and government benefits and healthcare has, like, pushed all the risks to the individual.
Yeah. And when the individual is the point of integration, I can't think of who's less qualified in most cases to do all of that integration as the person, you know, who's has to both live with the consequences, but figure out at a moment in time that, oh man, now I have to actually go make a decision about all of this, and has long-term implications.
Look, I think we are now expecting consumers to become experts in financial services and insurance and health. And I think that just frankly isn't fair on the consumer. There are a series of high consequence decisions they have to make. Oftentimes they get one chance to make the decision. So you think about Social Security as a, you know, one and done. And so there's a lot of anxiety from the consumer around these decisions they have to make. And again, the fact that you can't kind of get a redo, I think, you know, creates even more anxiety for today's retirees.
So we've known each other for a long time, so I don't want you to take this personally. But everyone knows that old people don't know how to use technology. Convince me I'm wrong.
So that is, I think, what everyone seems to think is the case. But I will tell you that boomers in their 50s and 60s, they're different. They actually grew up using, you know, telephones, computers. We had an Apple IIgs at home in the 80s. My dad is a retired doctor. He used to read CAT scans and MRIs on the computer at home in the 80s. I think what's different, though, is how, like, where these users are and how they make decisions. So, for example, you know, a millennial may be more active on Snapchat. What we find is that Facebook is the social media channel of choice for this demographic. In fact, 90% of users in their 50s and 60s are actually active on a social media channel. And I think what's driving that is actually this desire to be part of a community. So Facebook, for example, has really created that ability to reconnect with communities that you're in today and communities that you were in over the course of your life. But when I talk about how this user engages differently, I think a lot about user design. So you know, one of the things I think about is I have two young children, a five-year-old and a six-year-old. And you know, they interact with technology very differently than me. And then I interact with technology different than my dad. My dad is part of this generation that, again, started with computers. You know, we must have bought that Apple IIgs, I guess, at Radio Shack when I think about it, back in the 80s. And it would have, you know, it would not have been delivered via Amazon to our house. He would have gone and picked it up, brought it home. He would have taken out the manual, read the manual, and then started to put the computer together. And I think that use pattern is actually very endemic in what we see in our users, which is unlike a younger demographic who is much more comfortable with a kind of swipe left, swipe right user interaction. This demographic is actually very purposeful in how they interact. They want to be shown where to go in their experience. And that doesn't mean that they're not technologically savvy. It just means that a lot of apps that we see them potentially struggling with isn't because they don't know how to use technology, it's because it wasn't designed for them.
That is an amazing insight. What else have you learned from your users, right? Because it's easy to write off as, you know, we're on the younger side here. We adopt things in a certain way, and it's easy to therefore attribute that they don't use it the way we would use it, therefore they don't use technology. Do you have other insights like that on how they process and use technology differently?
Yeah, so our users are spending on average 30 minutes in user session times. And I think that just flies in the face of, again, how apps are built for a younger demographic. When you think about super short funnel, you think about, you know, how do you get someone in and out in, you know, 20, 30, 40 seconds. The decisions these customers are making are really high consequence. So they want to spend time on it. So they are spending time in the experience, building their plan. They love to digest content. And so they're really well researched. You know, this is a user who lived through 2008 and has kind of seen when things have gone wrong in the past, and is spending a lot of time really making sure and researching themselves that they're making a solid decision. And again, that like willingness to commit time is very different from what you see with the younger demographic.
Do they also leave and come back more frequently? Are they more likely to go check additional sources or start a session, to come back?
You know what I think? What we see is a lot of engagement with email. So, you know, for example, we send out a lot of content to our users on decisions around Social Security, Medicare, on email, and they are opening it, they're reading it, they're digesting it, and it is helping them complete this like retirement puzzle. And that again is there are these tidbits that they're putting together to tell the story and help them make the decision.
Fascinating. So, if you think about the technologies on the horizon, whether it's AI or voice or, other things, what most excites you as it relates to serving this demographic?
So look, I think over time, things like voice start to become super interesting when you think about mobility challenges as individuals age. I think for our user today, who's in their early 60s, what excites me the most is the ability to actually bring the puzzle together. So I think the early days of fintech and insurtech were about solving one very specific pain point. But when you look at this retirement challenge, actually what the consumer needs is a bigger picture being pulled together. And so what I get really excited about is, we're now in, if you want to call it like fintech or insurtech 2.0, where the rails have been built. It allows me to much more robustly, deliver that holistic solution because, we have the likes of Plaid and Quovo that I can use to aggregate our customers' financial accounts. And by the way, these users often have north of 10 accounts. You have the likes of Apex that allow us to build, super solid portfolios for decumulation. And as those rails have matured, it allows us to truly like solve the customer's real problem, which is like pulling the pieces together rather than kind of build a feature that just like is yet another like Social Security calculator.
Yeah. It isn't about improving a point solution. It's the value is in the integration across the platform, the holistic aspect of it.
Yeah. And again, this is where you think about, the decisions this customer is making are often like the inverse of decisions they've made in the past. So I always think about this kind of like accumulation versus decumulation story. So, when you're in your 20s and 30s and you're accumulating assets, you're, paying down student loans, you're buying your first home, you're getting life insurance, you're saving for retirement. I think about our users are oftentimes doing like the reverse, which is, instead of putting money into their retirement accounts or taking money out of their retirement accounts, they're often selling the home rather than buying a home. They're canceling the life insurance and buying long-term care insurance. Like there is this like inverse scenario that's happening. But the good news is that like the baseline technology is there, that even with a different problem you're trying to solve, there's a lot of the technology we can leverage.
So we talked a bit about the surprising insights related to the use of technology. Any surprises or aha moments as you looked at actually the retirement planning or the aging process itself, where maybe bucks conventional wisdom?
So a couple of things that stand out. The first is the number of accounts that our users have, and it's typically north of 10 accounts. And I think we all think about the millennial generation as this, this demographic that has had a lot of different jobs already. But the reality is that the average baby boomer that went to college had six different jobs since the age of 30. So they likely have six different retirement accounts. They typically haven't consolidated them. And then, by the way, if they're married, which about 80% of our users are, their spouse is likely to have a lot of accounts. So I think the thing that's really surprised us is literally the complexity of the account structure. And it isn't necessarily that the investments themselves are complex, but it's literally lots and lots of accounts. And that might be okay when you're putting money away from retirement, but when you start having specific tax obligations every year, you've got to meet, for example, meeting minimum distribution requirements with the IRS, all of a sudden running that mental math on 15 accounts, when if you're wrong, there's a 50% penalty tax, like all of a sudden that doesn't seem like the best way to spend your time in retirement.
Yeah. And which account and what assets you begin to draw down from, can have major consequences for the longevity of your retirement and financial wellness.
Well, look, and here's where we don't make it easy for the consumer. So, the minimum distribution requirements, for example, you know, the users have to go to the IRS website every single year, and they're basically presented with an actuarial table, and they've got to take this number and figure out how much they should withdraw from their different accounts. You know, my husband is 5 years older than me, so the amount that he takes out is different than me. Then, by the way, the actuarial table that Social Security uses is different than the actuarial table that the IRS uses. So again, it's like this like actuarial science, like complex math that we're pushing onto the consumer.
And so have you been able to actually integrate and simplify that for them in a single view?
Yeah, so that's really where our retirement paycheck comes into play. You know, one of the observations that we had when spending time with retirees was that there was this like peace of mind that you and I have with a paycheck, which is we know what we can spend on a monthly or a daily basis based on the cash flow that we have coming in. All of a sudden in retirement, we've asked modern retirees to shift this mental model from a paycheck into a spend down my assets. You know, you started out by saying, you know, this fear of running out of money. Well, you know, if anyone has spent any time being unemployed, you understand that anxiety of drawing down from accounts. And that is what actually modern retirement looks like. So when we thought about like how we could both give customers peace of mind and simplify things at Kinder, we really gravitated towards this retirement paycheck. And the idea is how do we help you pull these different streams of income that you have together so that you can have that income stream in retirement? And that you get that right balance between what we think about as like guaranteed income to cover all your essential spending, and then the flexible income for kind of the fun stuff, the, you know, taking the grandkids to Disney, the, you know, taking that long awaited European cruise.
So how did you go about solving, you know, we've moved from just, you know, doing a better job of presenting it digitally. Then you solve the actually, how do I do a better job of the aggregation of the holistic decision? But you're now talking about product level innovation where you're actually changing the fundamental instruments. How did you guys approach that?
So the first thing we really focused on was what was the customer problem. And it was really around like, how do you create this retirement income that you won't outlive? You know, that was what a pension brought to the table. And it's interesting because when you take that lens, what you all of a sudden realize when you're starting your company is that you have to be a little more flexible in how you build your company. So for example, today we're a registered investment advisor, but we're also an insurance agent and agency. What that has afforded us the ability to do is actually pull together the best of the traditional asset management. So we have these low-cost ETF portfolios that are designed to get you through retirement. And then we complement that with a low-cost fixed annuity. A fixed annuity I think about as, you know, the best of what a pension was, which was guaranteed income for life. But there's a lot of things that didn't strike us as in the customer's best interest when we looked at the annuity industry, mainly the complexity of the products and the hidden fees or commissions. So we spent a lot of time with the insurance industry and partnered with a company called American Equity that built a no commission fixed annuity for us. So our customers know exactly what they're being charged. There's no hidden fees. And then the second thing is that we really focused on, you know, what were the features that actually made sense for our consumers so that we could really get them the right features and not have kind of a bloated product that was adding, again, additional expenses behind the scenes. That I think, like, again, when I think about like no pension, you have Social Security, which is probably the best annuity out there. But for most of our consumers, Social Security does not cover their essential spending. And I think with this, you know, better version of annuity that we've built with American Equity, I'm really excited about the ability to add more guaranteed income to our customers' paychecks.
So I love it across the board, this idea of integration of views, integration of decisions, integration of products, so that it provides the holistic view. Can you actually deliver this, though, without having a lot of human interaction? Like when you say annuity, what immediately leaps to my mind is complex sale, takes a long time, big, you know, kind of relationship investment and educational investment to kind of get it over there, which runs completely counter to being able to strip out a ton of cost. How can you accomplish that?
So one of the core values at Kinder is how can we be human in a world that sees numbers? So what you just described there were, you know, all the crazy numbers and math associated with annuities. And you can lead with that, or you can really go to what the customer is focused on, which is, you know, I need a certain level of guaranteed income to cover a certain level of expenses in retirement. I want to think about that in the construct of how long my, you know, how long my money will last. So what we've done is we've taken out the commission, we've simplified the product, and then we just created a really easy to use application process. And again, that application process, it's online. You don't need to sit down with a broker to have that conversation. I think that anonymity also gives our consumers a lot of confidence in how they interact. There is a bit of a pressure, I think, often associated with kind of having that in-person meeting. So with Kinder, what we've given our customers able to do is have that kind of best-in-class digital experience that they can navigate anytime, anywhere, at their own luxury. And we do have licensed financial advisors, CFPs on staff, so that if there is something about your specific fact pattern that you want to get on the phone and talk with us, we're happy to do that. And I think it is that that kind of balance between using a digital experience to allow you to navigate, at your own time, and really strip out kind of the unnecessary complexity, but know that there are people there to back you up when you need them.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about the anonymity aspect as actually a competitive advantage versus kind of exposing the full kimono of here's all of my stuff, and it's something I'm already deeply fearful of. It really could lead you down a path where you feel like you're being judged.
Look, I think again, these decisions that you're making, like in your 60s, there is this preconceived notion that we all should know the answers already. And I would say that like you aren't expected to know the answer. Like you haven't applied for Social Security before. You haven't applied to Medicare before. But I think as a kind of industry, when you speak with a financial advisor and you're handed a 30-page document, the consumer feels uncomfortable if they don't understand. And that again goes back to this, like, how can we be human in a world that sees numbers? Like, how can we give you confidence in the decisions you're making and give you the time that you need to digest it? That we think about as paramount to trust building in this experience.
All right. Realizing we're almost out of time, but I can't help but ask you quickly, each age group, first if you're 60, what should you be thinking about? What's that number one thing that you should prioritize? And sorry to put you on the spot.
Yeah, no, that's fine. So I think about Social Security. It is likely your largest retirement asset. Most Americans default to 62, depending on how long you think you might live. You should really be thinking about that as the baseline for your retirement income and thinking about ways that you can actually defer it.
Okay, you're 50. What should you be thinking about?
So 50, it's all about getting your portfolio, your retirement savings into a low-cost portfolio. I think we all know that fees can eat away at those savings. We're all working way too hard to be paying 1.5%, 2% on our retirement accounts. So get that money in a low-cost ETF portfolio so that it can continue to compound for you.
40.
Jeez, at 40, I think about myself, and I'm putting money away still for my kids' college. But it's also thinking about the conversation I can have with my parents, right? So my dad is in his late 60s. That discussion of retirement is intergenerational. So while retirement feels far off to me, I think for many of us in our 40s, actually engaging with our parents in this conversation is pretty critical.
Fantastic. So, Brianne, if people want to learn more about Kinder and other resources you'd give, where should people be looking?
Yeah, so we're online. It's Kinder, KINDUR.com. Or you can find us on Facebook and on LinkedIn.
Thanks so much, Brianne, for sharing your wisdom both on the technological habits of the aging generation as well as how we should all be thinking about aging gracefully.
Thanks a lot, Jason.
Thanks, Jason. And thanks to our guest this week, Penny Crosman, Editor-at-Large for American Banker, and Brianne Horgan, CEO of Kinder. As always, we do appreciate your comments, suggestions, and questions. You can find us on Twitter at BreakingBanks1, or you can email us at info@provoke.fm. Do let us know if you're interested in sponsoring a show or a segment. Our sponsors make the show possible and often provide really great content. Or if you just like the show and want to support us in your own way, just give us a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast platform. That really helps new listeners find the show. And if you still want more, you can download and listen to more than 300 shows from Breaking Banks, plus our other shows like FinTech 5, Serial Entrepreneur, and Breaking Banks Asia Pacific with Simon Spencer, all at provoke.fm. That's it for this week, and we'll see you again next week with more Breaking Banks.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, for more of the latest in fintech news.